everybody. How's it going? Jay Henson here for another edition of Out of Bounds. Hope everybody is having a great work week. Had a good weekend. Hope everybody enjoyed the football games. If you didn't, I guess you're a Saints fan and probably a Chiefs fan as well. But get into that here in a minute. But let's start off the podcast here and talk a little bit about the NFC Championship game between the New Orleans Saints and these LA Rams. You know, this game really, it's hard to put. I mean, the Saints had so many different chances. Got won the toss before halftime, before overtime. Breeze threw a pick. Had a chance of stopping the Rams there on their first possession. Didn't happen. So, I understand why there's so many that's so upset with the call. But, you know, I'm just going to read basically what all, you know, went on in that game. But here's a little recap of the game from Sunday night. A big comeback, a blown call, and finally, a booming kick that sent the Los Angeles Rams to the Super Bowl. After rallying from an early 13-0 deficit, well, there's number one. Saints were up 13-0, should have put some more points on the board, and couldn't do it. There's example A right there. Rams stunned the New Orleans Saints with Greg Zuerlein's 57-yard field goal in overtime for a 26-23 win in the NFC Championship, an outcome that might not have been possible without a pass interference that wasn't called in the closing minutes of regulation. Everybody's seen the video by now. You got a nickel, Roby Coleman coming in. You could tell he's beat. He's just basically just been like, all right, I'm just going to hit him, and if the ball, hopefully the ball will get there before I get there, and obviously it didn't. And the only thing I can think of that the ref didn't call it was because maybe it was he thought the ball was already by the receiver. I don't know. I haven't seen a ton of angles. I've only seen that one angle where he's, you know, from behind, and the ball looks like it's by him. But there is one angle that looks like the ball is still in front of him when he got hit. So, either way, I think it should have been an interference call, because if it was, the Saints get the ball inside the 10, probably around the 9-yard line. All they got to do is kneel it three times and then kick a field goal with 3 seconds left and win the NFC. But one of the referees just didn't see it that way and, had to go to overtime and – look what happened. I mean, Breeze got the ball first in that overtime, throws a pick. And then all the Rams had to do was get up into field goal range. And it was a long shot. I mean, it wasn't like they went all the way to the 20 and kicked a chip shot. But, I mean, 57-yarder and guy hit it. I mean, it could have went for 75. That thing had a lot of room between it and the post. So, either way. Feel bad for the New Orleans fans. But, you know, the helmet, I mean, they could have called interference. They could have called helmet to helmet. Tommy Lee Lewis was irate about it. So was Coach Sean Payton, as you've seen. Sean Payton, like he said after the ball game, that the officials from New York called him, the league called and said that they got it wrong. And in my opinion, if I had to try and, you know, have this to never happen again, I would say the referee up in the booth who sees the replays, he needs to call down and be like, all right, look, there should be a flag. Y'all huddle, act like y'all know what's going on, and throw a flag. That's what I would do. Pretend like y'all are talking, but in reality, you're chewing them out for not calling it, and then just throw a flag up. That's what I do. But, you know, and plus the commissioner has a chance to, and he's obviously not going to do it because it's been 48 hours since the fact, but he could easily replay that game if he wanted to. But the thing is with Roger Goodell, he's not going to do that because the Saints did have other opportunities, and I'll get into that here in a minute. But anyway, you know, you got that, and you get the helmet. The helmet, you know, it could have been rough in the past, unnecessary roughness, but didn't call that either. And you know, it forced the Saints to settle for a 31-yard field goal that made it 23-20 Saints. A minute 41 to go. You're up 23-20. At least you're up. It's not like it killed you. After the no call, Jared Goff had enough time to lead the Rams down the field for Zierlin's tying field goal, a 48-yarder with 15 seconds remaining. New Orleans won the coin toss, got the ball first in overtime. But with Dante Fowler Jr. in his face and striking his arm, Drew Brees fluttered a pass that was picked off by John Johnson III, who was able to hang on to the interception while stumbling backwards. Rams weren't able to do much offensively, but it didn't matter. Zierlin booted through the winning field goal from just inside midfield with plenty of room to spare, and the NFL said it was the longest game-winning kick in playoff history at 57 yards. The Superdome, which had been an uproar all afternoon, suddenly turned eerily silent. It was the first home playoff loss for the Saints with Brees and Coach Sean Payton, who had been 6-0 in those games since their pairing began in 2006. But this one really hurt, in my opinion. If the pass interference penalty had been called, Saints could have ran most of the time off the clock to set up a winning field goal from a chip shot range. A replay was shown over and over on the Superdome's giant video board, prompting some fans to toss trash onto the field. I didn't see the trash, but obviously there was some. You know, the Rams, 15-3, and their 32-year-old coach, Sean McVay, kept a remarkable rise since moving back to L.A. 3 years ago. The team will be appearing in its first Super Bowl since the 0-1 season, when the greatest show on turf was still in St. Louis. The team hasn't won an NFL title in L.A. since 51, well before the Super Bowl era. The team moved to St. Louis in 95, only to return to Southern Cal 2 decades later. So, you know, all in all, hate it for the Saints fans. You know, if you're a Rams fan, great. You know, it was a really good game. Really, I mean, it was entertaining from start to finish. But in my opinion, if you're still really hurt about that game, then you really got to move on, because it's human error. That's why we love sports and we hate sports. You love it because, oh my goodness, that was a penalty that could have cost us the game, but thankfully they didn't call it. And then if you're the other side, well, that play cost us the game. And in reality, it really didn't. A turnover because the offensive line couldn't block. And also you had a 13-0 deficit, or 13-0 lead, actually. So there's not a whole lot of controversy. Yes, it was a blatant call. It was messed up. But one call at all of that? Come on, man. Don't get so aggravated over stuff like that. But anyway, Rams going to the Super Bowl. Who will they face? Well, the Patriots and the Chiefs played in the AFC Championship game. Patriots won that 37-31 in OT. It's the dead of winter, meaning the weather in New England can be brutal, and that the Patriots are headed to the Super Bowl. Those have been givens the last 3 years, in my opinion. Took them overtime and more of Tom Brady's brilliance to get there for the third straight year. While the folks back home dealt with frigid storm, Brady blew through Kansas City's exhausted defense on a 75-yard drive to Rex Burkhead's 2-yard touchdown run and a 37-31 win Sunday for the AFC Championship. The drive during which New England, who's 13-5 now, had 3 third-down conversions was reminiscent of when the Patriots beat Atlanta in the only Super Bowl to go to overtime 2 years ago. New England benefited from 2 critical replay reviews and made its 9th Super Bowl with Brady at quarterback and Bill Belichick as coach. It's the first time both conference title games went to overtime. The last time both visitors won conference championship games was in 2012. New England was 3-5 on the road this season. Several times, the Patriots appeared to have it won, only to see Kansas City come back in spectacular fashion. Brady, at 41, already the oldest quarterback to have played in a Super Bowl, drove New England 65 yards on a minute 24 to Burkhead's go-ahead 4-yard touchdown with 39 seconds left in regulation. That was enough, though, for his far younger counterpart, the 23-year-old All-Pro Mahomes, to to take the Chiefs 48 yards to Harrison Butker's 39-yard field goal with 8 seconds left to force overtime. Okay, I'll stop right there. Did anybody else think when they got the ball there at that particular moment, it was 11 seconds left, and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, it's what, second down? I think Mahomes just threw a pass over the head of Kelce in the end zone, or might have been Hill. But either way, I was literally sitting there thinking, okay, they'll have enough time to at least go one more play. You know, don't throw it in the middle of the field. Try to throw it in the end zone. And if you ain't got nothing, throw it away. And then you can kick the field goal with less time. But, you know, Andy Reid went on and did it. I mean, I'm sitting there looking around thinking, what in the world is he doing? I mean, he had a chance to come up with one more play. You're 19 yards away from the goal. But he decides to kick the field goal and hope for overtime, which obviously didn't happen because the offense never got back on the field. So, I hate it for the Chiefs. I mean, they've been through some tough times in the last few years, especially having really good teams and can't do nothing in the playoffs, to having a really good team this year, making the championship game and not trying. I mean, I'm not saying they didn't try the whole game, but that call right there, I just don't like that play. It's safe for a 50-50 coin toss. I mean, come on, man. Anyway, but you know, Harrison Butker, that 39-yard field goal with 8 seconds left was able to force it. But then the sizzling offense showing in the fourth quarter after the defense had been in charge most of the way. Indeed, the Chiefs were blanked in the opening half for the first time all season, and they never saw the ball in overtime, which along with the two replay decisions might call into play NFL rules and officiating. Mahomes finished 16 of 31 for 295 yards and 3 touchdowns. New England became the third franchise to reach 3 Super Bowls in a row, and Belichick now has 30 postseason victories, more than Bill Walsh and Don Shula combined. That Hall of Fame coaching duo has won 5 Super Bowls. Belichick shoots for number 6 in 2 weeks. All right, and there at the end of the game, if you notice, I think it was like the second or third play of the first possession with Brady and company. They were at midfield, drop back to pass, ball's tip, intercepted. I'm literally going, oh my goodness, they're going to beat the Patriots. Well, come to find out, there was a linebacker lined up offside on the right side of the defensive line. And for that to happen, I just can't believe. I mean, one, they only showed one camera angle. I couldn't tell if he was really that far off, but when they showed it again, I could tell half his body was across the dead gum line before they ever even, you know, nobody ever said anything. Somebody's got to be yelling or motioning to him, hey, get over. Or, you know, he's got to be smart enough to be like, okay, well, I don't need to be standing right here, right on top of the football. But either way, the neutral zone infraction was called, and the rest is pretty much history. But now it's going to be a Patriots and Chiefs Super Bowl. Of course, I've got 3 shows before that Super Bowl comes up, so I'll have plenty of previews and re-previews and all that good stuff coming up in the latter part of my show in the next couple weeks. But a lot of good stuff. Looks like a good Super Bowl going to happen down in hot Atlanta in a couple of weeks. But one thing I'm a little curious about is the Alliance of American Football. You know, this is their deal here with on their site at AAF.com. Led by some of the most respected football minds in the game, the Alliance of American Football is high-quality professional football fueled by a dynamic alliance between players, fans, and the game. Fans will be able to stream Alliance matchups live via the free Alliance app while accessing integrated fantasy options with real rewards for themselves and the players they're cheering on. Players will have state-of-the-art protection on the field and ample opportunities off it. The Alliance will provide players a comprehensive bonus system, post-football career planning, as well as counseling and scholarship opportunities for post-secondary education. Founded by TV and film producer Charlie Ebersole and Hall of Famer Bill Polian, The Alliance features eight teams under a single entity structure playing a 12-week season kicking off February the 9th on CBS and culminating with the championship game the weekend of April 26th through the 28th. And here are the eight teams. I went down the list. I went back, checked them out. I even checked out the rosters and head coaches, so I thought I'd throw these out there. You got the Arizona Hotshots. They will be green and orange. Their head coach, Rick Neuheisel. One of their QBs is Trevor Knight from Texas A&M. Pierce Burton, offensive tackle from Ole Miss. And someone from Middle Tennessee, wide receiver Anthony Amos from MTSU. Then you got the Atlanta Legends, head coached by Kevin Coyle. Their colors are going to be purple and gold. The QB, you might have heard of them, Aaron Murray of Georgia and Matt Sims of Tennessee. And then you got Denard Robinson of Michigan. You got Dominique Sanders of Georgia, Sheldon Dawson of UT Martin, Damian Swan of Georgia, Tavares Barnes of Clemson, and Reggie Carter, linebacker from Georgia. So some familiar faces. Then you go to the Birmingham Iron. It should be the Alabama Crimson Tide because they just about everybody on their roster went to Alabama. Their head coach will be Tim Lewis. Black and silver are their colors, so they're going to look a little bit like the Oakland Raiders, or the actually now going to be the Las Vegas Raiders. But their QB is going to be Blake Sims from Alabama. Running back, you might have heard of him, Trent Richardson. Yes, that Trent Richardson out of Alabama. And you got Quan Bray of Auburn, Chris Black of Alabama, LaDainian Washington from Missouri at the wide receiver positions. Then you got in defensive backs Ryan White of Auburn, Chris Davis of Auburn, Robinson Therese from Auburn, Arian Penton from Missouri, Bradley Silve from Alabama, and Trevon Reed from Auburn. Then you got offensive tackles Dominique Jackson from Alabama, Corn Curvin from Alabama, defensive tackles Nick James from Mississippi State, Ricky Hatley from Missouri, Rory Anderson from South Carolina, Dante Sawyer, South Carolina. The center is even from Alabama, J.C. Hausenauer. So it's just a lot of guys for the Birmingham Iron that a lot of people are going to know. And on paper, that looks like a really good ball team. Then, just down the road in Memphis, the Memphis Express, they will be red and blue. Head coach Mike Singletary, I'm sure you've heard of him. They got Justin Martin, a defensive back from Tennessee, and Arnold Tarpley from Vanderbilt. He played just a few years back, so they'll be on the squad. Then you got Colin Jeter, the tight end from LSU, and former Titans quarterback, who's 0-7 as a professional QB, Zach Mettenberger. He'll be the QB for the Express. Their wide receivers, Alton Howard from Tennessee, Kawan Ross from Kentucky, and then you got running backs Kenny Hilliard from LSU, Rajon Neal from Tennessee, and Terrence Maggie from LSU. I remember Maggie had a really good game a couple years ago for the Tigers, so that's a really good pickup there for the Express. And then you got defensive ends Corey Vereen from Tennessee, Chris Weathered from Tennessee. So all in all, a lot of good players here for Memphis as well. All right, now you go to the Orlando Apollos. Their head coach, Steve Spurrier. Colors will be navy and orange, and they should be the Florida Gators because 11 of the 12 guys that I've wrote down on here are Florida Gators. The only one is the QB, I do believe, but I don't think I put it down. Anyway, the one is a kicker, Elliot Fry from South Carolina. But you got tight end DeAndre Goolsby. You got wide receivers Louis Murphy, Frankie Hammond, and Chris Thompson. Ronald Powell, Earl O'Keeney, Leon Orr. Then you got the Salt Lake Stallions. Head coach would be Dennis Erickson, which I'm kind of surprised he's not with the Apollos because, you know, Dennis Erickson was the head coach of Miami for a long time, won a national title in the 80s. Their colors are going to be blue and silver. Their QB is Austin Allen of Arkansas. It's the only one they really got that was in the SEC. Then you got the San Antonio Commanders, head coach Mike Riley. Colors will be red and maroon. They got three guys from Texas A&M, linebacker Sean Washington, tight end Cameron Clear, and wide receiver Speedy Noel. And then you got San Diego Fleet head coach will be Mike Martz. Their colors will be black and gold. And got a couple guys from SEC, Ron Brooks, defensive back from LSU, and punter Sam Irwin Hill from Arkansas. So be looking around for the Alliance of American Football. I'll have a lot of that covered here on my podcast, so it should be a lot of fun in the next coming months. But Tennessee defeated Alabama on Saturday, 71-68. Grant Williams scored 21 points. Alabama was called for traveling with 3 seconds left, and Tennessee rallied past the Crimson Tide 71-68 on Saturday for its 12th straight win, and it helped them to reach the number one ranking in both the AP and coaches polls for the second time in school history. Last time was in 07-08. That was back when Chris Lofton, Bruce Pearl, Tyler Smith, you know, guys like that that played. They had a really good team that year. Tennessee won its first four SEC games by an average of 25 points, but had a much tougher time against Alabama, who is now 11-6, 2-3 in the SEC. The Vols blew a 15-point lead and trailed for much of the second half before pulling ahead for good on Admiral Schofield's basket with 2:12 remaining. Tennessee led 69-68 when Williams was called for an offensive foul after leaning into Alabama's Dante Howell with 11 seconds remaining. After a timeout, Alabama worked the ball to John Petty, who matched a career high with 30 points. This time, Petty couldn't deliver. The sophomore guard was called for traveling as he began his drive around the foul line. The Vols last won 12 straight in 1976-77 when they went 22-6 and earned a share of the SEC regular season title. Tennessee survived this one despite shooting just 29% in the second half and missing 10 straight field goal attempts at one point. Number one Tennessee now 16-1, 5-0 in the SEC, heads to the Music City to take on the struggling Vanderbilt Commodores, 9-8, 0-5 in the SEC. And, folks, this one might get ugly in a hurry. Now I'll talk a little bit about the Vandy Commodores, their 71-55 loss to Mississippi State on Saturday. Memorial Gym is not a pleasant place for most opponents to visit, something Mississippi State Bulldogs know all too well. If everybody remembers, this is the same program that came to Vanderbilt about 10 years ago, Shane Foster's senior season, and lit up Mississippi State. I'm talking lit them up. And had one of those great moments, scored 8 points in 30-some-odd seconds, or 9 points in 30-some-odd seconds. And it was just one of those things that I'll never forget. Me and my cousin Brandon Bobo, we'll never forget that. I mean, that was a great, great ball game right there. That makes leaving with only the program's 10th victory in 57 games at the SEC's oldest gym very special. Quindary Weatherspoon scored 17 points, and Mississippi State never trailed in routing struggling Vandy 71-55. The Bulldogs, now 14-3, 2-2 in the SEC, now have won 2 straight after dropping their first 2 games to open league play. They needed this victory as the first of back-to-back road games and part of 4 of the next 5 away from Starkville. The worst start to SEC play in school history has only gotten worse for Vanderbilt, 9-8, 0-5 in the SEC. Freshman Simi Chateau, Vanderbilt's leading scorer, missed his first 5 shots and finished with a season-low 7 points, well below his 14-point average. This was just the start of a brutal 4-game stretch for the Commodores with the first of 4 straight against ranked opponents. Take on Tennessee tomorrow night, and then followed by a trip to Oklahoma on Saturday, and then finally a visit from number 8 Kentucky next Tuesday. So Vandy got some more bad news today. Darius Garland will not be coming back next year. I think everybody had that as a given pretty much, but it was done today. It was told on Twitter during Johnny's show, actually. And he has withdrawn from Vanderbilt and will head and get ready for the NBA draft. So hate to see that, but, you know, hopefully he'll get a lot of money and get a lot of playing time. And hopefully his knee will hold up and be perfect, and he'll play up to everybody's expectations is all I got to say about that. But good luck to Garland on that, and hopefully he'll have a well deserved and well and a great career, hopefully, in the NBA. Looking in the SEC standings, Tennessee and LSU tied in the, at the top. Tennessee's 5-0, LSU's 4-0. Kentucky, South Carolina, and Ole Miss all 4-1. Mississippi State, Auburn 2-2. Then you got Alabama and Florida all 2-3. Missouri 1-3. Texas A&M, Arkansas, and Georgia are 1-4 with Vandy at the caboose at 0-5. Talk a little bit of the Lipscomb Bisons. They are looking pretty good in the A-Sun. Garrison Matthews scored 25 points. Eli Pepper had 9 points and 11 rebounds. And Lipscomb beat Kennesaw State 86-57 on Monday night. Matthews scored 17 points in the first half, making 8 of 10 free throws as Lipscomb led 41-33. The Bisons hit 12 of 14 free throws in the half and finished 20 of 27. Rob Marbury added 14 points for Lipscomb, who are 14-4, 5-0 in the A-Sun, and they're off to their best start since 99-2000 when it started 14-1. The Bisons have won 15 of the last 17 against the Owls. Now on to the struggling Memphis Grizzlies. Yesterday they took on the Pelicans of New Orleans. Jahlil Okafor scored a season-high 20 points, matched the season best with 10 rebounds, added 2 blocks to help the balanced New Orleans Pelicans beat the reeling Memphis Grizzlies 105-85 on Monday. Memphis has lost 6 straight in 12 of 13. Several games ago, the theme of the skid was frustration. Monday, it was part of the city's annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day festivities. The Grizzlies have injury problems, and there has been drama from locker room scuffles to getting rid of high-paid off-injured Chandler Parsons from the team. Marc Gasol led the Grizzlies with 22 points, as Memphis was limited to 38% shooting in the game after making 10 of 20 in the first quarter. The Grizzlies host the Charlotte Hornets tomorrow night at the FedEx Forum at 7 p.m., and we will have all the action right here on Nashville Sports Radio with pregame at 6:30. Little update with the Southwest Division. Houston Rockets and San Antonio Spurs tied for first. The Pelicans are 4.5 back, Mavericks 6 back, and Memphis is 7.5. And now for the NHL, talk a little bit of Predators and their big win over Colorado last night. The milestones came a mile up on Monday afternoon. Predators head coach Peter Laviolette earned his 600th career win as Nashville defeated the Colorado Avalanche 4-1 at the Pepsi Center. The victory snaps Nashville's 2-game losing streak and gives the Preds their bench boss a monumental achievement in the process. Nashville centerman Nick Bonino scored his 100th career goal on the day, as well as the Preds got goals from 4 different players to collect their 29th win of the season. Nashville's final game before the All-Star break and bye week comes tomorrow night in Las Vegas against the Golden Knights. Puck drop is set for 9 p.m., and this one will be on the NBC Sports Network. In the Central Division, Winnipeg Jets still have a 2-point advantage, but the Predators have expanded or have gotten their length of the third-place Wild a little bit wider, as they're not closing the gap anytime soon as of right now. With 62 points, Winnipeg is at 64. Minnesota's at 53. The Stars and Avalanche both at 52. Blues at 47, and Blackhawks are at 43. So a lot of good things going on with the Predators right now. They've still got 2 more meetings with Winnipeg, even though both are up in Winnipeg. But either way, just 2 points behind right now. Got a 29-18-4 record. So a lot of good things going for this team right now. They're getting healthy. They've still got a couple guys still on IR. But they'll get Johansson back tomorrow after his 2-game suspension after a high sticking last week. So should be a lot of fun in tomorrow night in Vegas. And so hopefully the Preds can get a big dub there. And maybe if Winnipeg plays, they'll lose, and maybe the Preds will be tied for first place. Who knows? But we'll see Nick tomorrow. But talk a little bit of Prednik Nation here as they'll get everybody ready for the game tomorrow night. You know, all you got to do is look up Prednik Nation on Twitter at Prednik Nation, or just go to PrednikNation.com. Also, go to Facebook at Prednik Nation. And I think it's Pregnant Nation Radio on Facebook. But either way, but all you got to do, just tune in. Join my dude, Captain Crazy Charlie Sonye, and the Renegades of Puck featuring the Ultimate Predator, the man so far in the future, Greg Mostradamus Mashopoulos, and Brandon Felder, as they bring you everything you need to know about the Preds on game days from 5 to 6 each morning, and have the encore presentation from 6 to 7 on game days after the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show. But won't have that tomorrow due to the fact that the Grizz and the Hornets. But then again, we might. We'll have to see. I'll keep everybody updated on that. But if you want to get a hold of me, all you got to do is go to Twitter at Jay Henson Sports, or just go to Facebook and look up Jay Henson. You'll see my beautiful face on there doing a mean mug. But either way, I mean, I do a lot of different stuff, you know. I mean, I go on there and I just throw my 2 cents out the window like I usually do anyway. So it doesn't matter. I mean, sometimes I do impressions, you know, like Donald Trump, like, hey, we're going to build this huge wall. I'm just telling you right now, it's huge and it's going to be amazing. And let me tell you, Jay is the best podcast host I've ever seen. Guaranteed. Incredible. Hey, thanks, Donald. I didn't know you were coming in today. Hey, I didn't know either, but hey, I dropped in. Anyway, thanks, Donald. We'll see everybody on Friday night or Friday. And hopefully everybody will tune in. Hope everybody enjoyed today's show. See you Friday, my friends. Have a good week.